It's Friday, October 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President Obama changes course on strategy in Afghanistan.
The threat to South Korea, Japan, and the United States will top the agenda, certainly after the August landmine crisis and exchange of artillery fire.
South Korea's president visits the White House. We hear from a regional expert. Also ahead, gold investors have a little bit of good news, finally. Miley Cyrus has another bold and outrageous tour planned. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama says he will delay the planned withdrawal of American military forces from Afghanistan, scheduled for next year, as the Taliban makes gains there that the United States was not anticipating. Speaking at the White House Thursday, Obama said he will maintain the current number of troops in the war-torn country at 9,800 through most of 2016, before trimming that number to 5,500 by the time he leaves office in January 2017. The president said the mission in Afghanistan will continue to remain twofold, training Afghan forces and conducting counterterrorism operations. He said the Afghan military is still not as strong as it needs to be and that the Taliban has made gains in rural areas that can launch deadly attacks on cities. VOA White House correspondent Aru Pandey tells International Edition host Susan Yaki about this change in President Obama's Afghanistan strategy.
Well, basically what the president announced today is that the drawdown will not be taking place as rapidly as he had announced last year. What he had originally proposed was that 1,000 U.S. forces would remain in Afghanistan after 2016, and those troops would be largely based in Kabul to protect the embassy. What we saw announced today is that 5,500, so nearly five times the number of U.S. forces, will now remain in Afghanistan post-2016, and they will not just be in Kabul protecting the embassy, but also in a number of bases, including in Kandahar and other parts of Afghanistan. So the major announcement here is that, look, we're going to continue our withdrawal, but we're not going to do it as fast as we had hoped.
What explanation did he give for this change of policy?
Well, he basically said the security situation is not basically where it should be at. He said Afghanistan is still dangerous, and while he praised Afghan troops, their capabilities, and their ability to basically fight for their own country, he acknowledged that they are not where they should be in terms of their abilities. So he said that the U.S. forces are needed to continue their training and advising mission and also their counterterror missions. He basically said, look, we're not engaged in major ground combat, but they need our help, and they're still not as strong as they need to be. He said that in key areas of Afghanistan, the security situation is still very fragile, and in some cases, there's the risk of deterioration. And we saw that in recent weeks with the Taliban retaking Kunduz, which is a key city, and then obviously Afghan forces were able to take it back. But that was a huge sign and a huge loss, and I think President Obama was able to say, look, this is not where we need to be, and I don't think we can just pull out and just leave 1,000 forces there after 2016.
Were there any signs of the White House that this was coming other than the leak to the media today?
Well, yeah, I mean, they've said for a few weeks now, ever since this whole takeover of Kunduz, that while President Obama does not make snap decisions, he is always mindful of the conditions on the ground, and he's always taking that into account. And you heard President Obama say that today when he was asked after his statement whether he found this decision to be disappointing. President Obama came into office saying he was going to end the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and he basically said he's not into endless war. And he said, look, it's not disappointing. It's an acknowledgement that the security situation is not where it's at, but that he's always going to be willing to make adjustments when necessary, and he might do so again. So there were some signs in recent months that the administration was taking a hard look at the security presence and the troop levels in Afghanistan and was willing to adjust when necessary, and we saw that today.
VOA White House correspondent Arup Pandey. President Obama made the pledge last year to remove all U.S. forces from Afghanistan by the end of 2016, with the exception of a small contingent of 1,000 troops based at the U.S. Embassy in Kabul. He said it was time for the United States to turn the page on a war launched in 2001 in response to the terrorist attacks on the United States. But we turn our page now to what's being said online about the president's announcement. As always, our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, is right here with the latest. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Did the White House tweet about this?
It sure did. The White House shared a video clip of President Obama's statement, and that video clip is the most popular tweet from the account Thursday, with more than 300 people sharing and marking it as a favorite, respectively. The second most shared tweet from that account reads like this: "May God bless our troops and all who keep us safe. And may God also continue to bless the United States of America, @POTUS. The White House is on Twitter @WhiteHouse.
Well, what's the reaction from press accounts?
A lot of analytical pieces. The New York Times tweeted a link to an article by Peter Baker, who is on Twitter @PeterBakerNYT. He tweeted, "Looking for a different outcome than in Iraq, Obama opts for a different approach in Afghanistan." Baker argued Afghanistan is more directly tied to American interests in Iraq or Syria because it was a base for al-Qaeda planning the 9/11 attack.
And what about outside of Twitter?
Well, for that, let's move on to our website. VOA's White House correspondent Arup Pandey's article, who we heard from earlier, is getting a lot of traffic. It's titled, "Obama Slows U.S. Troop Withdrawal from Afghanistan."
Oh, do we have some reader comments on this?
Oh, absolutely. Here's one from Kenya. "It was a big mistake for American troops to go to Afghanistan. It's now very dangerous for them to withdraw. The region is just too volatile." Another reader from Brazil wrote this: "I am sure President Obama would like to keep his promise and withdraw American troops from Afghanistan. However, the situation has changed and the withdrawal will increase terrorism in the region. As absurd as it sounds, Afghanistan and Syria need strong leaders to stabilize the political and economic situation. The concepts of freedom and democracy will have to wait." Jim?
Well, G. Abby Lee, thank you for being here today. And, you know, G., you always give us some great Twitter handles to follow. I would suggest to anybody listening to follow her. She tweets on our International Edition Twitter account @VOA_IE and also on her own account @GAbbyLee. This is VOA.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated 1/4 of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. 2/3 of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
This is VOA's International Edition. And as you just heard, G. Abby Lee was in the studio with all of our social media reaction, which we do every day on our program. Well, we kept her a little bit busier this week and sent her out of the building. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Chinese President Xi Jinping was here in Washington for a state visit to the White House. It was surrounded with the trappings of a dinner, entertainment, and, of course, meetings. Now, South Korean President Park Geun-hye meets with President Obama later Friday in a more subdued summit, expected to be an intimate discussion primarily about tensions on the Korean Peninsula. The visit is a good chance for President Park, midway through her presidency, to reaffirm trust, solidarity, and friendship with its closest ally. G. Abby Lee sought more details on the visit from a recent discussion here in Washington featuring Bruce Klinger. He's a senior research fellow for the Northeast Asia at the Heritage Foundation. Klinger says North Korea is definitely topic one.
As always, the threat to South Korea and Japan and the United States will top the agenda, certainly after the August
landmine crisis and the exchange of artillery fire, and then North Korea's threats to do a missile launch and perhaps a nuclear test, even though it wasn't directly tied to October 10th, as many had perceived.
Do you expect any reference to the six-party talks in either the fact sheet or the joint statement after the summit?
There will likely be almost a toss-away remark of, we hope everyone gets back to the six-party talks. That's consistent with what China does, but there's really a difference behind the scenes. China would like everyone to abandon principles, abandon the requirements of the six-party talks, negotiations, simply to get everyone back in the room. What the U.S. and its allies see is that as much as we would like that, there really is little utility to get back into the room formally amongst the six parties as long as North Korea refuses to abide by the basic objective of the six-party talks, which is the denuclearization of North Korea's nuclear arsenal.
When the two leaders discuss how do we get China on board, what do you expect the two leaders to discuss the most in depth?
I think, first of all, there will be a discussion by President Park to give a readout of her meetings with Xi Jinping in Beijing in September. Obviously, the governments would have exchanged some views, but I think President Obama would certainly welcome the opportunity to hear directly from President Park what she thought Xi Jinping's views were, what Chinese reactions to another North Korean provocation would be, in order for the U.S. and South Korea to coordinate on that.
We've seen softened stance from North Korea recently. What do you think is the bigger drive behind that change? Food shortage or increased pressure from the international community following the COI report?
What we've seen is the landmine incident was in August was really, in a way, very strange. On the one hand, I can't imagine the North Korean leader directing the military to plant a single landmine south of the military demarcation line. It's too detailed. On the other hand, I can't imagine in the North Korean system a soldier, a colonel, even a general, on his own initiative doing something which could lead to a confrontation between the Koreas. I think the reality is probably that Kim Jong-un pressed his military to be more confrontational, to challenge the South Korean military and the leadership, and in a way stumbled into this crisis. And then once he saw how firmly and properly South Korea responded, then in a way he had to stumble his way out of the crisis. And that reflects what many of us perceive is the inexperience that Kim Jong-un has compared with his father.
Bruce Klinger, Senior Research Fellow for Northeast Asia at the Heritage Foundation. Well, now, for those who invested in gold seeking a safe haven from the recent market turmoil, they may have been disappointed in the performance of the precious metal as its price also fell amid struggling stocks. But gold has made an abrupt turnaround. And for more, we are joined by economics correspondent Alexis Christophorus from our VOA Bureau in New York.
Jim, gold regained some of its luster Thursday, jumping to a three-month high to settle at $1,187.50. Signs of stagnating U.S. inflation and retail sales, coupled with an economic slowdown in China and Europe, has investors betting the Federal Reserve will keep interest rates low for the time being. That revived the appeal of gold as a store of value for investors. Gold bulls are returning after ignoring the metal for much of the year. In fact, gold prices have tumbled 29% in the previous 2 years, thanks to strong economic growth in the U.S. and a stronger U.S. dollar. Some analysts believe the fundamentals, along with the technicals, are all pointing to a bullish close for gold at the end of this year. 21 of 41 analysts surveyed by Bloomberg see gold prices ending 2015 with a loss. The rest expect a rebound. Jim?
Alexis, I understand that China's slowdown has also put a dent in Burberry's bottom line.
Yes, the British fashion house Burberry is blaming lower spending in Hong Kong and mainland China for a big drop in first half same-store sales growth, which rose just 1%. That's compared to a 10% rise a year ago. Burberry blamed traveling Chinese consumers and its geographic mix for the weak results. In the second quarter, same-store sales actually fell 4%. 4%. It marks the first time in 6 years same-store sales have declined at Burberry. In the past, the company has benefited from Chinese shoppers spending in the high-margin markets of mainland China and Hong Kong, but that spending behavior has changed in recent quarters as stock market turmoil and a slowing economy have been compounded by volatility in the currency markets. A weaker euro has certainly made shopping in Europe cheaper for Chinese tourists, but the relatively strong British pound has discouraged tourist spending in Burberry's home market of the UK. Jim?
We don't rely on quarterly reports, but we do have strong daily reports from Alexis Christophorus in New York. Alexis, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Do you own a relatively new Volkswagen? The German carmaker says it will recall 8.5 million of its cars in Europe as a result of a scandal involving rigged emission tests. The move was prompted by German automotive regulator KBA, which earlier ordered Volkswagen to recall 2.4 million of its vehicles containing software rigged to outsmart vehicle emissions tests. It might sound good, but the company has drawn criticism for being slow to respond to the emissions scandal that broke late last month when U.S. authorities announced that they had discovered the problem. The issue concerns Volkswagen's use of software to cheat the system by switching pollution controls during emissions tests, but then shutting them off during normal driving. Volkswagen admitted that some 11 million of the German carmaker's diesel vehicles worldwide contained that software. Well, Miley Cyrus is arguably one of the biggest current pop acts, and she's about to go out on a limited tour with the band Flaming Lips. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald visits our studio with more on what is sure to be another outrageous appearance from Miley Cyrus, who is well known for showing herself off. Ray McDonald in the studio with us. Ray, I understand that Miley Cyrus is back in the news and about to be back on the concert trail.
Jim. Miley and the Flaming Lips, very avant-garde rock band from Oklahoma that she has befriended. These two are going out in concert next month, and they want you to be naked in public with them. Lips frontman Wayne Coyne went on Instagram Tuesday, and he said, for one show, Miley, the band, and the audience will all go naked. He says white stuff that looks like milk will be spewed everywhere. Sounds a little gross, but
okay.
that's the plan. The concept is for a video for the song Milky, Milky, Milk. Mm. Miley Cyrus is amazing to me, Jim, because of all the contemporary pop artists, she is by far the most independent and unpredictable. Her strings are not being pulled by a record company or by a management team because no one in their right minds would be doing these things. Mm-hmm. It's all Miley.
We saw her provocative nature certainly in the Wrecking Ball video.
Yes, the Wrecking Ball video is one of the most popular on YouTube for fairly obvious reasons, and it played a very large role in helping Wrecking Ball become one of Miley's biggest hits.
I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was to break your walls. All you ever did was
think initially a lot of us looked at her as perhaps a Madonna or Lady Gaga wannabe, but Miley has kind of stepped out on her own and really created her own persona out of this.
She absolutely has. It's a total change from her, you know, wholesome Hannah Montana Disney persona. She's no joke. I think there's definitely method to her madness. I don't know how this whole naked concert thing is going to go over, but she does have another arrow in her quiver. In December, she's going to be on TV in Bill Murray's Christmas special, A Very Murray Christmas. It features George Clooney, Amy Poehler, Chris Rock. I mean, a very, very hip, big cast. And Miley's going to be part of that, and that will be debuting December 4th on Netflix.
I wonder if they'll be scripting parts for her or just let her show up.
I would imagine that will be pretty carefully scripted, and I would imagine it would also require clothes. I just close my eyes.
Check out Ray's Top 20 Countdowns every week right here on The Voice of America. Follow him on Twitter, Ray on the Hits.
Ray on the Hits.
Ray, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
You wrecked me.
You've been listening to International Edition. We reside on our website. It's voanews.com. Visit our site any time of the day or night that you like and listen to the program always. We're also on Twitter. Our handle, @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter. Our engineer is Zineb Abdel-Rahman. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Really thank you for joining us. Come back again. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
October 16th is World Food Day, a day of action against hunger. The date commemorates the founding in 1945 of the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, or FAO. On this day, people around the world come together to declare their commitment to eradicate hunger in our lifetime. Over the past decade or so, we have seen a great reduction of people living with hunger on a nearly daily basis. Back then, about 1 in 6 people went to bed hungry most nights. Now it's about 1 in every 9. Nonetheless, that still leaves some 795,000 chronically hungry people around the world. Of these, 60% are women, and this despite the fact that most small farmers living in the developing world are women. And when women go hungry, so all too often do children. About 161 million kids under the age of 5 are malnourished. This means that their brains won't develop normally. They may have difficulties learning, and their physical and cognitive growth is stunted. Lack of nutrition compromises not only their own success in the future, but also the development of the communities, economies, and countries in which they live. In addition to those children who are chronically undernourished, almost 5 million children under the age of 5 die of malnutrition-related causes every year. The global community is working to eradicate hunger because it is the right thing to do. The first of the United Nations Millennium Development Goals called for halving the proportion of people suffering from hunger and facing extreme poverty. We have achieved that goal. As we transition to a sustainable development agenda for 2030, we have raised our ambitions and are striving to effectively end hunger and extreme poverty altogether. The United States aids this effort through its innovative Feed the Future initiative. We partner with country governments, many universities, multilateral and non-governmental organizations, transnational organizations like the UN, research communities, and the private sector to lift millions of vulnerable people out of hunger and poverty. On World Food Day, the United States reaffirms its commitment to the fight against poverty, hunger, and undernutrition.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.